Hey everyone, welcome to a really unique episode of the Three Pillars podcast by Capcom and Conduit, where we were attending the Game Developer Conference in San Francisco in late March of 2024. This episode will be broken up into three parts. The first part, we start the podcast as normal at the start of the week. We're feeling fresh, kind of getting some ideas for what is going to happen this year at GDC. The second part is actually at a live developer meetup that we brought the mic and recorded some interviews and little snippets from indie game developers of all shapes and sizes at a park that we had at the start of the week. So that is kind of interesting. You get to hear really on the ground floor, what are people making games thinking about and talking about today. And then the third section is Okabe-san, Thomas, and I winding down with dinner, as well as my colleague GC Chu at the end of the week. And so you can maybe feel a bit of the energy shift, but then also what do we actually learn and what ended up being accurate from the very first part of the week. So we hope you enjoy and would love to know what you think.
And a quick disclaimer, the opinions on this podcast are those of the individuals themselves and do not reflect the views of the companies those individuals represent.
So here we are in San Francisco this time.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
For the Game Developer Conference 2024. Yeah. So probably one of the biggest games industry conferences for business in the world now, maybe the biggest.
Yeah.
We were talking at breakfast, but how many GDCs has it been for each of you now?
I think it's my fourth. I think my fourth or my fifth, yeah.
Maybe 10th
year.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Excluding the 2 year for the COVID. Years for the COVID.
The pandemic. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, what was it? So when was the first year, Okabe-san?
I don't remember, but probably it's more like 10 years ago, before the Capcom. So that was the first time I came here. And then at that time, I was working for the Now Production, and then I was the video game director, also the producer in that company. And then that company, they tried to get some game development opportunity from the Western company like Activision or UBI or that kind of big publishers. Mm-hmm. And I make some presentation to them, and actually, I'm not that good at the English at that time also, but I try to give presentation in the English to them. It's kind of really good opportunity to, you know, run some, you know, presentation in English to the Western publishers. Yeah,
it must have been like a kind of make you sweat a little bit. Challenging, but
it's useful. Challenging. Yeah. But we only have the 30-minute slot for the each publisher. So it has to be quick. So
Wow.
Nice. Do you remember what the pitch was?
Several game titles. It's original. Everything I prepared, kind of original game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. One of them is kind of, you know, detective type of the game, right? Point and click.
Oh, yeah, point and click, yeah.
Things, and also, Now Production is, it's not really famous company, but famous for the, do you know the Katamari Damashi?
Yes.
Bandai Namco. So we were a developer for the Katamari Damashi with the Bandai Namco.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So So it's kind of good pitch for the big publisher, like the Activision. We are kind of, you know, Katamari Damashi developers. So please hire us.
Okay.
I'd hire, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that helps. Do you remember what were the results? Did you get some business?
It's really hard to get any type of the project with the Western publishers. But once we got the contract with the UBI San Francisco, we gave them kind of, do you remember the Wii? we have the remote controller with the mic. I get mic. Oh. No, speaker.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how much I can describe this thing. Yeah. But anyway, so the one game designer in the Now production, they he created some specific adventure game for the Wii. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, cell phone that the protagonist have the cell phone.
Okay.
So
I can already see where it's going. Yeah.
Really? Okay. So as the controller, like mobile phone. Mm. So there's some kind of, do you remember that, like something like Saw, the movie Saw?
Yeah.
So it's kind of same situation, like that someone calls you and give kind of specific order through the mobile phone.
Oh, okay.
That kind of adventure game. We presented it to the UBI San Francisco, and they kind of like that idea. Mm-hmm. So we start some demo phase with them, maybe around $1 million budget or something. Mm. Yeah, but it's not really, you know, released as the official game title.
Mm. So I see.
We closed the during the demo phase.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah. That kind of activity I did before the Capcom.
Oh, wow. So it's pretty experimental.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like trying to try a new type of game, multiple device.
Sounds exciting.
Sounds exciting, but it's really tough. And
Yeah.
Do you know the Bakugan?
Bakugan, yes, I do. It's like the... It's
also...
I
was the director for the Bakugan DS1. With the Activision. So Activision has probably two or three different category of the publishing department. Like AAA also, they had the Call of Duty or something like that. But they also had for the kids game. We visited once or twice the meeting with the producer for the Bakugan. And then the Bakugan is a Sega Toys IP. But Sega Toys, they don't want to make the video game. But Activision, they, you know, licensing the IP for the creating the game. And because the Bakugan has the toy, actual toy, and it's super famous in US at that time. So that we create a game for the Activision because the Activision think that it's based on the cartoon series in TV in Japan. And they think that maybe Japanese developer is good for the cartoony style game.
Oh, okay.
That's why they ask us to create a Bakugan game for the multiple platform. So we support the DS and then Wii, PS, and Xbox. Everything, yeah.
So they literally saw the toy. They saw like, oh, maybe it's more like cartoon style. So then they were like, oh, maybe it, like a Japanese developer fit this type of game.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so it kind of takes like some knowledge or of like what the, you know, they think Japanese art style or anime or manga. Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
It's a great opportunity for me to, you know, present our game to that big company.
I know in those meetings, so it's like, you know, these are mostly American companies that you were pitching. Do you remember anything? Did they like say anything or act a certain way that was like you didn't expect or was kind of hard with the culture?
Maybe this is not good for the podcast. I cannot maybe broadcasting, but once I had the meeting with the probably the SIEA, people from the SIEA, the woman, and then at that time, me and my boss is Bucho from the Now production. Only two people presented that game, and then first time I met that woman, and then she said, you have to cut your hair.
Oh, really?
Because I kind of, you know, now it's still kind of long hair.
Yeah.
But longer than now.
Oh, okay.
How old?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Was it a joke was she like a serious?
Maybe.
Maybe it was meant as kind of like a playful thing. I don't know. Kind of teasing.
Or,
thing? I don't know.
Maybe kind of teasing.
Yeah.
Or like a, like a parent to child thing. Yeah. Like maybe she was older than you. Like looking out for you.
Weird to be brought up.
Yeah.
Like right away.
Yeah.
It's before the presentation started. So.
Oh, maybe she was trying to mess with you. Get in your head before you do the presentation. The whole presentation, you're like touching your hair.
You're like, oh,
crap, it is too long.
I need to get a haircut after this.
Yeah.
Wow.
So every time I visit the GDC, it reminds that memory.
Wow.
I visited GDC. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you cut your hair now before every GDC?
Yeah.
Make sure you're going to get a nice hair.
Yeah, yeah. This time, yes.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. I still have the longer hair, but
good. It looks really clean.
Yeah, it looks very clean.
I try to be clean.
I wouldn't say it's long now, to be honest.
Yeah. I think it's a good story. Yeah. It's funny how like those little things will stick with you too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah. How about you, Thomas? Was there any advice or meeting like someone said kind of offhandedly that's like stuck with you that you can think of?
No, but I don't really pick up on those kind of things. How to say, like in Japanese, they call it kuki oyoma, where you have to kind of read the room, the atmosphere of like
KY.
They say things very, not backhanded, but like very roundabout way. But when I go to the US or like Belgium, where like things are more straightforward, I don't really pick up on it, even if it's like kind of like I don't really pick up on it. Yeah. So if unless they're like, your hair is too long, you should cut it or something like that, I probably won't notice. I don't pick up on the
just staring at them like,
yeah, my brain switched off. Like, I'm not in Japan anymore. I don't have to think about it. But but GDC, like meeting wise, I don't think I have any like of those type of stories. I do have like one trauma during GDC. I'm not sure. Yeah. Also, how much I can share on the podcast, but we were working with like a partner who we were doing a hardware bundle where if you bought a hardware from the partner, you get like a Steam key. And there were like some miscommunications about how much keys we would be providing, and they were asking for more. And I escalated to my boss then of like, yeah, they want more keys, but what should I do about it? I really need your help because I can't handle it by myself. And then my boss was like, that sounds like an issue for you. I'm busy. Like,
just like nodding.
That
sounds like your problem.
Yeah, that's more of a you problem, not a me problem. So then I had to try to figure that out during GDC and during meetings.
That was kind of a blunt
trying to figure out how to solve. I solved it though, but that was kind of like a trauma.
It's a trauma.
It became a trauma. I was like, that was a tough time.
Oh, really? Yeah. That boss. Yeah.
So, how about you, Kai-san? Do you have any memory for the GDC especially?
I don't think this wasn't at GDC. But I remember one thing I remember like being taught by an older person was, so when I started visiting Japan to, you know, meet with the Japanese companies, I feel like in US or Europe, but especially US, people are always really excited. And so you kind of like talk over each other and you almost have to like kind of like fight to like get a word in.
Oh.
Whereas like in Japanese culture, it's very much like everyone, you kind of let the other person finish what they're saying, and then like, there'll be a pause, and then you kind of know it's like, okay, you're cute. At least to me, it seems a bit more distinct when it's like your turn to talk.
Mm, right.
And I think when I started off, I was really excited, of course, to come to Japan and start working with video game companies. And so there was someone definitely more senior than me. I remember they kind of scolded me or like took me aside after the meeting and was like hey, like what you did in there, like you basically shouldn't do that, I don't think you know like what you did, but I think I was excited, and so I was like, I would like jump in and like start talking while other people were talking.
Okay.
And so then I like that really stuck with me. I think I turned like pretty red after. I was like, oh my god, like I totally ruined the meeting.
Oh yeah.
But so now it's funny moving back to the US and having meetings with like American companies, especially when it's a large group, I find myself having a hard time getting a word in because I'm like now used to more of the Asian culture of like, there's like, will be space, but sometimes it'll hour will go by. And there's like there was no time for me to say anything. So I was like, oh, I guess I have to like jump in more. And it, like, it's like something that Americans probably wouldn't even realize it's happening. Like funny, these like little things that you end up paying attention to. And then, sometimes in conversations, I'm like in my own head thinking about like the structure of the conversation that's happening. And
I think as you said, I do feel when I meet the American companies, they get very excited or they're very quick at throwing out ideas.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, maybe we can work together this and this, or maybe this works. Well, I feel if you work with Japanese companies, you have your pitch. Okay, thank you. We'll look into it. We'll see what we
can
do next. That's very different.
Different. So I really like to, you know, give any presentation to the Western company because the reaction is so much different compared to the Japanese company.
Right.
So in Japan, no one really give me any opinion.
It's very hard to get feedback.
They
will say, we will think about it internally. We will discuss and then we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes it's like, it doesn't make sense for us at this point in time. But we will, of course, keep in touch. And that's where the discussion ends. But then you don't really get any feedback, right? So that's why it's fun to come here and like talk to many people, many different plans. And like, what do you guys think? Do you think it's good? Do you think, good, this is not? So it's very good to get that instant feedback.
Like how long... Like, so for the Japanese company, you know, you give the presentation, like, oh, thank you, we'll think about it, talk with the team about it. How long then does it go until you'll hear back from them? Like, do you always hear back from them too? And like, how long is that usually?
It depends on how big the company is. Mm. But I feel the bigger the company, the longer it takes. So like sometimes a month goes by or like 6 weeks and you already kind of forgot about the meeting. And then they're like, we're sorry, we looked into it, but it doesn't make sense for our plans right now. And I don't know. We had that meeting 6 weeks ago.
Like they set a calendar reminder. It's like, they tell them no, like 6 weeks from now, maybe.
I think they are discussing internally, but since decision making in Japan is very group based, I think you have to. There is some PR element involved, so I'll have to talk to the head of the PR department to see how he feels about that, and then maybe take that back.
Yeah.
And so, you know, head of the PR department is very busy, so by the time you get a meeting in there, it's already 2 weeks have passed.
I see.
So that's why decision making goes a bit slower. But I feel once. In Japan, it goes very slow, but once it's locked in, it's locked in. There is no more changing it either.
Oh, yeah.
So while I feel Western companies, they're more, cool, let's do that. You advance, and then like 3 weeks later, didn't make sense for current plans. Or things change, I'm sorry.
Oh, I see. Oh, they've already committed, like, we're going to do this with you. And then.
Sorry, didn't make sense anymore.
Yeah. It's a bit like you're like trying to capture like a butterfly or something, it's always moving around.
So
that's why contact is the very important.
Have you found that, are there different types of countries that honor contracts more than others? Like, are there like different cultures, like where contract is more important versus others?
I feel Western companies are very important to get the contract signed and in there. While I feel feel Japanese companies, they're more based on trust. So if you have the Ringi system, I don't know if we explained that in a previous episode. I'll have to explain that. Make sure everyone's on. So in Ringi, it's you. So we talked about the group decision making thing. So of course, first you already talk to everyone to get their buy-in. And then they need to officially approve it. So you prepare a document. Internal to a company. Internal. You prepare an internal document and then you put it in the Ringi system where everyone kind of puts their stamp on it. So everyone who's in flow with first, you know, at first your department, then business planning department, then the PR department, then our legal department, then our financial department. Okay. Up until the CEO has to sign off on something.
Is it actually done with stamps, by the way? Like
it's all digital. It's all digital.
I was hoping it'd be like with the kanji.
I mean, some documents, I think, you still have to stamp physically. But usually for those, now it's digital. So that's why it takes a lot of time.
I see.
And usually for us, it's one, even if we don't have a contract inked, I think it's different, similar for other Japanese companies. Mm-hmm. Even if it isn't inked, as long as the Ringi has been approved, we're fine to move forward to do things. The contract is more of a formal matter rather than
I see. So it's more like verbal agreement or verbal commitment. Right. So it's, we have agreed verbally or on email, like, yeah, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. So like in Japanese company, that's kind of the most important step. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
even before that, yeah, the trust build.
The trust building, I think.
Sometimes it's hard to, you know, keep the relationship with the Western company because the, normally 2 or 3 years, they change. So it's hard to keep the communication with them.
That's a good point you mentioned. Yeah, because everyone's of course switching jobs a lot more often. Yeah. So I think you need more of those contract paper-based agreements, because if someone else jumps in, they can just, okay, this is what we agreed on.
Right.
Well, in Japan,
if the people leave the company, the hikitsugi is really important things, but in Western company, they really don't do the hikitsugi.
No.
I don't know how to express it.
Honor the commitment?
Passing on, like for example, if I were to leave.
Like offboarding, we would say.
Yeah, offboarding to someone else. And I feel, in Japan, it's very, very important. Like, I think the last month or like even 2 months before you leave, you'll be like, this is what I worked on. This is how I did that.
Really?
Like, yeah.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah. Or like even
make a documentation and verbally doing it.
Yeah. Also, one thing of Japanese culture, you have the manual, they call it. So you make like a manual of how you used to do things or like for this. So you make a step-by-step of like, this is how you do things. And then you pass off the manual to someone else so they can do it.
Wow. So people like literally are making these like binder, like it's like a bunch of documents about how I do something for the next person. They're starting manual.
Yeah. So like, this is what I used to do. This is like my routine work at this team. And like, I need to hand it off to someone else.
Whoa.
So this is how you do it, new person. And I will teach you, or I'll set up a meeting to teach you how to do it.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like it's too much, but
it is. I feel at times as well. Sorry. Yeah. What I also, just before I forget, thinking more about like, how it's more person-based. Like there are things that I used to be in charge of like many years ago, but because I haven't done that offboarding, I'm still in charge of it. Tasks, like the longer you're at the company, the more tasks kind of follow you around. So like I'm not in charge of that anymore, but like since Japan is not like very position-based, like or like job description-based, it's more of like you wear many hats throughout your career.
Okay.
So like things that I did 5 years ago, sometimes you're like still, that thing you did 5 years ago, can you tell me more about that? Like how did you used to do that? Sometimes an email comes through and like, okay, follow up on that.
Interesting. So you're kind of like a balloon with like a lot of sandbags on it or something.
You've
got like a lot of things that like people...
Yeah. In my case, it's not probably the exactly same situation, but... We released many games, right? So after the 10 years, still we get from the users, like user support from that this game doesn't work because of blah, blah, blah. And then customer support group have to, you know, take care of their users. And then they reach out to the developer like us, but we don't really remember anything.
Seriously.
I don't know how to answer that question.
I know. Do they even find you if you're no longer at the company, like, or do you have to still be at the company for the customer support? It's like say it was a game for like that, like at a previous company you worked on like 15 years ago, would they still try to find you or maybe
no it,
oh okay
in that case in the, no
oh, okay, okay.
yeah in Capcom, any game I did, they, you know, contacted me because I was the producer. So I have to find out who will be, you know, the right person to answer this question.
I feel maybe it's specific to Capcom, I don't know, but producer is a very heavy role. You're really the father of this title. So no matter 10 years from now, if something happens with that title, they will still like, you were the producer. So it's your responsibility to kind of figure out anything that comes up with that title. So
it's, I know, would you recommend like if someone is looking for like maybe they're in college now or they want to work in the games industry, where's like a good place to start? Like is producer role or like is that... like the producer type of role, is that like a good place to start or like where's the how would you get started? Say they're non-technical too.
They're non-technical.
I feel for a producer role, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I feel you kind of need to have some experience of like how game development goes. You need to kind of see the bigger picture and know what's happening when, so you can be proactive and react before things happen instead of more reactive. So I think producer role might be difficult to start out with.
So maybe in Capcom, not for the everyone, but probably good for the someone who had the game development experience, any team, like artist is good, or probably the software engineer is the idea from my perspective, because they know everything about how to make the game, right? So the software engineer is good, and then maybe the artist or game designer or any, you know, experience before the producer or the anything related to the game development process is good for the, you know, to be the producer.
I didn't have any experience on Capcom Arcade Stadium, like developing. Mm. I think that sometimes showed as well. So that sometimes was like, baptism by the fire, is that?
Oh yeah, right? Baptism by fire. Yeah. Just throw you into the...
Yeah, just throw in the wild and kind of go with the pitches, yeah. Yeah.
I know, do you see, like, you know, because now with AI and all these, like, different, different tools that are coming out, do you think... the producer role, like, do you think there are any roles that'll really be affected for working on a game? Like, some maybe don't need as many people doing this, or like, will any of that change soon?
I feel talking just for the producer role, yeah. I feel producer is just like the adult in the room. So anything that goes wrong, you're kind of there to fix the problems.
And yeah,
I
yeah,
think
yeah,
no
yeah.
matter exactly. yeah, yeah. AI, no matter where AI comes in, there will always be problems. Yeah. So I feel the producer role might not be that much affected. Mm. I mean, you might get more tools and you might have to do less, but you'll always have to solve issues and see how to go about it. But that's just, I experienced it myself. So it's more easy for me to imagine how AI impacts that, but I'm not sure how other jobs in the development process would be impacted.
I don't know. But yeah, definitely the producer is kind of role for the solving the problem for the any, you know, problem for the video game. Yeah. Making the game also the after the release, then still we have to solve it, some kind of the problem. Like a customer support or maybe the any sort of the problem.
Yeah. I think AI, of course, will impact lots of jobs. But I think in the end, there will always need to be someone who looks at like what's being created by AI to see if it's good or not. So I think, I'm not sure what the impact will be at this point in time.
But definitely, we have to use the AI software for any kind of the task related to the game development.
That'll probably be the big theme of GDC this year, I think, is AI.
AI is dominated.
And now there's even with an AI, you have a couple different things. You have generative AI, which is creating something from scratch with AI, like in the movie or the image. And then I don't even know the name for the other one, but it's more like editing or compilation, compiling AI, which is actually somewhat, we use some of that and are working on some of our own loosely for Conduit. Because it's like we start with gameplay or footage. And it's not like we're not like trying to recreate the game, but we're trying to like understand the game very quickly so then we can help them with marketing or like other tools. Mm-hmm. So, it seems like, you know, every developer I think I've talked to so far this week, it's like you can use AI to kind of get started and maybe put some things out there, but it still isn't enough to make like full games or something that you would release and be picked up. So, I wonder.
Yeah, I wonder how it'll evolve. But.
Yeah. Are there any, let's see, so coming back to GDC for a second, like all the companies attending, are there any you're really, you'd like look forward to meeting or the ones you're excited to hear about or see?
I think it's just always fun to catch up with many people, see what they're working on, see what they're doing. So for me, there's not like a partner that stands out specifically. Yeah, I think the like meetings at GDC is fun too, but like when you go, I think it's even more fun to go to like the actual headquarters of like American companies to kind of feel how different that is from like, because you know,
we are, when you meet Japanese companies, they're very similar, but like, you know, here you have Silicon Valley startup, like we're like a completely different vibe compared to Japanese companies. So it's very interesting how American companies do like the company culture and so on and so forth.
Yeah, Capcom is kind of westernized company, but still Japanese old school type of the company. So the thing I visit the Bob, the Steam, that they had this huge fitness area
for
employees, and also the catering and free drinks, free food.
Yeah.
And also that they, once a year, they, every employee goes to the Hawaii, I think.
Right. Yep. So they still do that.
With their family.
Very interesting. Yeah. I think before, like, well, maybe not with family, but like during the economic bubble area, or like the period of high growth, there were like many company trips, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. I don't know if I can share this, but I feel like when, after Street Fighter 2, got released, like they were like, there was this huge company trip to abroad as well, which is of course like 20, 30 years ago. So I wasn't there for that.
Yeah, you're still asking around.
I heard
Street Fighter 2 had this good party.
I'm pretty sure there was like some huge trip that they did. But yeah, back then the company was a lot smaller too, I think. They were like,
We're here in San Francisco at a co-working space and for the week. And even I am like, it's been a while since I've been in like a tech office, but yeah, it's like downstairs, you know, we have the, you know, yogurt, drinks, snacks, breakfast every day. You know, you walk down the hall and there's a different startup in every room. I was like, you know, it's still people are still coming in. Like, I know there hasn't been that much excitement around San Francisco the last couple of years, but yeah, there's still people showing up every day building tech products and new things. So
that's what I think that's what I like most about GDC. Like last year as well, you meet so many people, you get so much inspiration. So like I had some plans of like, oh, this might be something cool that we could do for Capcom. So like on the flight back, I just was like writing my notes and like, oh, this would be a cool company idea. This would be like, we could do maybe something with this, and like get so many ideas.
Yeah.
So that's what I, and like the vibe here, as you said, like so many startups, it feels very vibrant. So it's a lot of fun to be here.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I think if anyone listening is interested in working in the games industry, or like even just wants to meet a bunch of people that are doing different things, I think this game developer conference in SF every March is the best, at least in my experience, because you'll have so many different disciplines in one place. You'll have a developer, a designer, a business person, an investor, we were at an event last night where some indie games were showing called Courage, and it was neat. I was talking with people that they've been to more GDCs than I have. I think this is like my eighth one now. And then I was also talking to people, this is their first one, and they're like super excited and like, oh, what do I do? And like, I want to get a job in games. Like, how does that work? And it's I think for us, you know, not like I'm that seasoned, but it is kind of inspiring to be like, oh yeah, like it's still fresh. People still are like showing up and entering brand new, which is cool.
Yeah.
So I hope you enjoyed that first part where we're just kicking off the week at GDC. Now we'll go to the live park meetup where we had almost 400 game developers attend and see what they had to say about the conference and the state of the games industry today. Okay, so yeah, we're here at the GDC Boba meetup for Conduit. And what's your name?
Massey.
Yeah, Massey. So what are you working on? What brings you to GDC?
We're building Crew. We're trying to build to bridge the conversation and bridge what it means to be a game. So the idea, we're trying to answer the question, what does it mean if you turn conversation into a game? And so we gamify community conversation, gamify engagement, so you can meet like-minded people and build meaningful relationships.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. What's it called? And it's in Discord?
Yeah, it's called Crew. And so, yeah, we're launching our beta in Discord. And so basically what we'll be able to do is match you with any member across Discord to have like a real-time voice conversation, and then tell you what you have in common and help make it fun and easy, win points, get entries into giveaways, win cool prizes.
Oh, wait, so is this more like a social tool? Is it meant for game devs? Like, who do you think is going to be installing it and using it first?
Yeah, so the idea is that it's a great opportunity for you and your members of your community to show off your community to other people across the internet, specifically focused on Discord, but really anything. The idea is that if you're a game dev and you want to get your game out there and you want to be able to build a community around it, well, use the people that they already have to be advocates and help them find like-minded people and play along with them.
That's I feel like, I mean, even for us, Conduit, we moved our products. We're going to move them back to a website soon, but we actually moved them into Discord the last few months to rapid prototype and talk with people. Is that like kind of the ideas like about product development?
Yeah, that's all these. You know, we're big. Obviously, Midjourney was, you know, a huge proof of concept of people building massive products on Discord.
Yeah.
We're taking, I think, a similar approach. I mean, slightly different in some extent, but I think in many ways the same, is that it's a great place to find like-minded people. And so let's really help people do that.
Yeah.
So you tell me your story about how you created Conduit.
I mean, basically, it's like, I'd worked with a lot of like AA and like publishers over the years, but then it was just like more exciting. It's just like startup mentality, right? It's like, okay, how do you make something that's useful and repeatable for like lots of people?
Yeah, when you see you can build something that's truly transformational, you can't unsee that.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, I was like, why is like no one really designing for indies right now? It's like, there's so many more people are making games than when like we were kids.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's only going to get younger and easier to make. I think it just felt like, what? Yeah, why not?
Game is the future of the creator economy.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's like people aren't, you know, there's TikTokers and there's YouTubers and music artists. But I think now that the tools of creating games are being so democratized that, you know, having kids building on top of Roblox and getting their, you know, taste in with .lua and, you know.
Yeah, what's .lua?
Lua is a file. It's a scripting language. So easy. To go make your sort of custom experiences. So if you feel like you have a voice and experience that your inner world tells you must share with other people that they'll love, like whether it's a song or a painting or a funny video or a game, it's now so easy to start turning that into reality, especially with like generative code stuff.
Exactly.
So you can start telling, like, all right, I want to make a Roblox map that does like this, and you're allowed to shoot guns, but you're not, like, generate me a Lua file to be able to do this stuff.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you just created a Roblox game. It's not gonna be perfect, but it gets your foot in the door to start making stuff. And then, you know, you're maybe 12 when you do that. Well, then it's not too far to do, like, you know, Unreal Fortnite, you know, game. It's a little bit more complicated. You build and build.
It's getting, human nature. It's like slowly building blocks, getting there. Yeah.
And then who knows? You could build the next PAL world, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like,
we've
now
seen it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 4-person team, right? Like, you start making cool stuff, you'll attract other cool people.
Yeah.
So it's such an opportunity, I think, right now to be on the ground level of building a game.
Yeah.
There's so much, like, cool, create, like, seeing all these games, like, now there's also with TikTok and, like, be able to, like, what y'all are doing, be able to, like, get content out there and get, like, even if it's not perfect right away, just getting that rapid feedback from an audience, like, what clips work well, which ones don't, like, what are people reflecting to, what are the moments that are, like, that are highly retentive, that get people coming back and introducing it to their friends, and you can learn and grow so much more quickly than you could beforehand.
I mean, I think we're trying to find the thing that's really useful that we can build and then make it available to a lot of people, right, and so... To be honest, like, marketing, every game is different.
Yeah.
And so we set out, we're like, well, maybe there, like, we know games, we love games. So maybe there's some way where we can make it repeatable and, like, it is still better than, like, what an indie or a dev was going to do anyway.
I see, okay.
Yeah, so that's, I think our bar right now, it's kind of like, you know, it's just starting with, like, kind of content that maybe it's nice to have, but it's more like for engaging a current community. Like, frankly, we still haven't found, like, the way to make something that's like a true viral hit. Like, I still feel like that has to come from the dev themselves.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and so there's that. But really what we're getting good at...
Is that like, so is the main tool that you have, that like creating the content?
Yeah.
That, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's basically I think what we're doing right now is content transformation.
Yeah.
So we can change Steam into TikTok, or we can change LinkedIn into a video for like your Twitter account.
Right.
So that's what we're getting really good at. And the thing is, we can do that. Like, we can make 1,000 of those a day, 10,000, like, there's no limit.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, if that's a strength we have, then, like, what's, like, another way that's useful? Like, who is that useful for? So.
Yeah, that's the thing to think about, especially when you're, like, thinking about how devs actually become successful or viral on, like, TikTok or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, what is the type of content that they create? Is that something that you can automate or not? Or, like, which parts of it can you automate?
Exactly.
That. Especially when you're talking about, like, CapCut and stuff is, like, the main...
Yeah, CapCut's great.
Use,
right? And it's like, I don't want to compete with CapCut.
Right,
I love CapCut. I use it all the time. Yeah, so it's like, it's like, I don't think we're meant to, like, make yet another video editor. It's more like, we would just want to make something that's, like, just, like, turnkey easy. So it's like, you almost, like, it's like...
portfolio.
Yeah, it's like, you're just, like, you know, someone's in Unity building. It's like, oh, that's cool. And you can just, like, record... And then it comes back to you in like a minute. It's like, hey, how about this? Good to post? You'd be like,
yeah.
Meant to be like that, like right there in the workflow.
Yeah.
So that's like where we want to get to.
So, like, as long as they follow me somewhere, I don't really care. I just want them to buy my game. That's the end of the day thing when it comes out, which is coming out next month.
Oh, really?
So,
what's it called?
It's called Sherwood Extreme.
Okay.
It's a co-op crossbow shooter with bullet time parkour.
Whoa. So you do slow motion backflips with your friends and go for high scores.
Dude, that sounds cool. I mean, it makes me probably dating myself. I remember, like, I think it was the original Matrix as a game. Maybe that's like a 64 PS1. Yeah, I remember.
It's kind of like Max Payne, too. That was one of my big inspirations.
Yeah, that's what I think about.
Yeah, slow motion diving.
Right. Yeah. That was like one of the best parts of that game.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like taking that and like making it something new for sure.
Yeah, and it got like 140,000 players in early access already. So it's doing okay, but yeah, we want to see more. So I was working at Santa Monica Studio for the last 5 years, and I just quit 2 months ago to go full time indie.
Wow! Dude, what a journey.
That's when I started the TikTok and everything too.
Ah, nice.
So the way that the game started was that I made a few prototypes with my friend in like a few days each, put them on for free online, and this one was the one that like went viral. I got like thousands of downloads the first day. People were making YouTube videos and stuff, and that was like 4 years ago. Oh. So since then, we've been working on the same game, iterating, making it, adding stuff, making it better. And we had it for free initially, which is how we got 140,000 players. Oh. And then now we're charging $20 for the full version stuff. So we're hoping that people are still interested. Man. Get another 140,000 for $20, then we're talking money.
Yeah, so basically, the idea started, GDC 1 year ago. I was here, because like, my background's more business development, company-to-company partnerships. And so I was like, oh, maybe I could help bring indies to publishers. They're like, there's something between like investors and indies.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my idea going into GDC. But
yeah, do you know like Exola?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like something Exola. Like that.
Exola is an awesome company. Yeah, yeah. Like I really look up to them. But then I was like, you know, coming out of GDC, I mean, yes, of course, there's like this funding need, but like, I didn't really know how to solve it because it's like, there's so many more games being developed. And so then I was like, well, what's funding? Yeah, what's the second hardest thing? Marketing. Because it's like, you're building a game, people are really good technologists. The other thing you need are customers or players, and then that's like really hard.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know why. Like, there, I looked around. Like, I feel like there aren't very many tools for that. Cool. So what are your names?
I'm Liam.
And I'm Ryan.
Nice. And what's your studio and what are you guys working on?
So we're Pigeons at Play. We're working on Mycopunk. It's a co-op FPS with procedural enemies, and we're focusing on teamwork and building outlandish loadouts.
Got it.
Yeah.
Nice.
The game is called Mycopunk. Yeah.
Oh, Mycopunk.
I just want to show you like this little boss fight we have. We have semi-procedural, fully destructible enemies. Basically, they have a bunch of limbs, and every single thing can be broken apart by them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're planning on having four characters. We have two characters set up right now.
Yeah.
But it's very much a co-op experience, like mission-based thing.
And so, what was like your inspiration for the game? Like, why did you guys choose to work on this?
We were inspired by really fast-paced FPS games like Ultra Kill or Borderlands. So we have kind of a similar stylized art style with outlines. And we just wanted something with completely modular enemies where you could shoot off like half of something's leg and it'll be like trying to crawl toward you.
Is it like procedurally generated, or is it like you guys are kind of self-contained and like designing the levels yourselves?
Yeah, so the levels, we make them by hand, but the enemies, they're sort of procedural. They're in these archetypes, so like the grunts are always going to be pretty similar, but they can, like, if you sever a laser arm off of one enemy, some other can go up and pick it up and start shooting you with it.
So it's kind of like, okay, you go into like one boss fight or you fight one enemy, but then that could actually turn into like three different ones. So it's kind of like the battle like evolves and like turns into different unexpected things.
Like you might shoot this really powerful arm off a boss, but if you don't destroy the arm, some little tiny enemy could come over and pick it up and start shooting you with it.
Okay, it reminds me, I'm dating myself. It reminds me a bit of like Half-Life, where it's like you kill the guy and he has the spider on his face, and then and then like, oh, he's dead. Oh wait, no, the spider thing is still chasing me and grabs me. So, that's cool. I thought that could be pretty nostalgic for some people, at least if it's small spiders, you know. But yeah, that's cool. How long have you guys been working on it?
About 9 months.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice. And then why did you feel like this was the time to look for a publisher?
Well, we've been working on getting our demo level and vertical slice set up, and finally at the point where it's all ready, and so we want to get a publisher to help us get to full release.
Got it. If I could ask, if you're not able to find a publisher, what's the plan?
Well, we're definitely going to keep working on it. We won't be able to do it full time if we don't have a publisher, so it'll probably take longer, but yeah, no matter what, we're going to release it.
Got it.
Game's got to come out regardless.
Yeah.
Got it.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's
fingers
cool. Crossed. I mean, frankly, it's like, I mean, personally, that's what I like to hear too, because that's, even for us, like, we're a bootstrap company, and it's like, you have to kind of get out there and just iterate, like find like five people to play the game, 10. Like, it's like same for us. It's like partly why we host these meetups and like release free tools is we're trying to learn what's actually valuable and like listen closely, get like honest feedback, and then, you know, you have to make a bet and like go for it. And so also when you're looking for investors or publishers, that's what they want to see, like grit. Because it's like, if you're like, hey, yeah, I'm like working over here, but if you give me $2 million, I will work on this game. That's like, okay. So you basically become an employee, like, because they're paying you. But it's like, if you're working on something yourself, not only do you have more leverage, but yeah, it's like, okay, you're showing up and like working on something. That's really important. So yeah,
we're all in.
That's awesome. Hell yeah. Micropunk, all in. Super cool.
Nice. Well, we're students right now. So,
cool.
So we're working on games and stuff. But, like,
nice.
Maybe next year we make some pieces game and we need some marketing stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, what's like the most annoying part of making a game today?
Of making a game today? All the other people making games.
That's a good answer, yeah.
I'm just kidding. Like, crowded. It's very nice. It's a cool community. I don't know. What's the most annoying part?
To assure whether the gameplay is useful or not, or like, it's efficient. I mean, the gameplay. Yeah. Because at the first time you are deciding to make a game, you don't know whether the game will be interesting or not. And that's the most tough part of me. Myself.
Yeah, so it's
because it doesn't have any difficulty in making games, so
so it's more like, how do you test the content or what you're building, like, with people early? You mean like feedback or not really?
Figuring out if what you're making is actually fun.
Okay.
If you're trying to make something that nobody made, it's like, is this fun or not? No,
true.
And after you put 1 year effort on it, and most people said
it's not fun.
That sucks.
Yeah, I know. How early do you plan, or have you like gotten into some people to have you? Do you have like a prototype or anything right now, or
some small prototypes not ready to show?
I was like, have you showed anybody, like maybe your cousin or like your roommate or
just
no?
In class we've been showing.
Oh, classmates. Oh, okay. How did the other students give feedback on it?
To be honest, there is not enough feedback from other students because most of them are like, "Oh, this is really cool.
Yeah.
I like it."
We're trying to be nice and
each
other up.
So you're like, what do you do with cool?
Nice, all right, that was what I was going for. I can't do anything with this now.
I see. Yeah, so maybe you're looking for like more like actionable way.
Yeah.
Maybe make it easier for them, where like, because they probably like don't want to hurt your feelings because you guys are friends or like students, and they're like a way where they can give like objective feedback, but then it's also more helpful for you, right?
We'll check out.
Please. Whenever you guys have a build. Yeah, good meeting you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
We'll do.
Because I've talked to people who have done the speed run.
Yeah.
And I've been like, oh, okay, so like you are in orders of magnitude bigger than whatever, you know, indie thing I'm doing. But at the same time, that's how you start. That's how you you just have to try and really be persistent with that.
Take your shots.
I'll see some of the people who win and stuff, and I'm like, damn, like, some people get cut a pretty sizable check. Like, no matter what the amount is, like, it always will help a company like that.
It's hard
like
to say what works and what doesn't, right? When it's like the VC game. And so, I don't know, it was just interesting because I was talking with this guy, Neil. He used to be at Google.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah, now I'm trying to get into like building tools, do all this other stuff. And these two other guys walk up. One of them was from the Netherlands and the other guy was Russian or something. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm like a startup founder. I own like two companies. I'm like, damn. I'm like, wow, I am so out of my element. Like,
man, be around them, you know, that's where it starts. You got to like be around people that are like working on something you or somewhere you want to be.
And now we go to the final scene of the episode over dinner, drinks, and a review of who we met, what we learned, from all the talented developers at the show.
So for the food, I can do some, like, maybe group ordering.
Yeah, sure. You guys okay? I'll leave it up to you.
I think we'll do at least, the ceviches here are super good. So I ordered like a 2 ceviche, 1 sashimi kind of grilled octopus, the steak kind of stir fry dish.
Yeah.
The seafood here is really good. I haven't had the steak here, so I'm kind of curious.
Oh, okay. You've got to enjoy it while it lasts, right? California? Right.
Yeah, exactly. Fast forward, we're at the end of GDC, 6 days in. Most people have left already. We're still here. We're joined by GC Chu, my teammate from Conduit. You know, we're getting Peruvian ceviche out by the water, San Francisco. What was everyone's impression of California this trip? You're 7 days in now.
it was very productive, I feel. We can't talk too much about what we do for what we did here for work-related stuff, but I feel kind of shaped. We had many ideas, and I think talking to many people, it kind of put everything into shape, and I think we have a good thing to work for, the next year, where we can I think one of the first days that we were here, I was talking to Okabe-san, and I was like, yeah, you know, work's interesting when you set like those little goals for yourself, that something that you want to achieve with, like, within the year or the next 2 years.
Yeah,
I think we were able to set a goal, so yeah, that'll make work a little bit more fun too, I think.
I had fun. I realized how much fans you're not accumulating. It was really good to see the reactions to Okabe-san's comments and the attention that they paid as well. And also it was very fun to learn, like, the surfer who cannot surf carries the board around.
Oh, there was a word for it in Japanese. I forgot what it was.
Okasafa.
Okasafa. Oka is like
The coast.
I didn't put one and one together, but now I do. Okay. Now I get it. Yeah. Okay. Cheers. Yeah. Cheers. To a good week for sure.
It's a strong one. Huh?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted something whiskey. So yeah, I wanted some hard liquor to kind of say, okay.
I know. At the end of the work. Yeah. I'm the same way. A business trip. I want a strong, like, whiskey.
Yeah.
Fat glass.
Yeah.
Whiskey?
Yeah, it's whiskey with some. Okay. If you want, you can have a sip. Yeah, go for it.
That's what you're saying.
Okabe-san's got news, man. So we met a lot of indies that...
Yeah.
In this particular week, there were a lot of indies that actually shared Japanese theme or games that were clearly influenced by Japanese culture. So that was really interesting as well.
Yeah.
Because, for example, there was a Greek team that came in. So it's a really interesting team. They are two Greek individuals who migrated to the Netherlands, started a company there by creating a game based on Japanese mythology.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, if they're making Japanese-themed games, like, where are they from?
They're from Greece.
They're from Greece.
So they're from Greece, but now they're based in the Netherlands. So it's a Greece and the Netherlands team. Oh. They started their studio out of Netherlands. It's part of the EU, so, you know, it's easier to move around.
Wow.
But if anything, it's a globalized, very globalized story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
I think it's also scary for them when it's like they're presenting a Japanese-themed game to a Japanese
company. That's
right? Cool, yeah. There's more pressure on them. Did we do it right? Did we do it correctly? And was it honorable? They honor the concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus, this is Kawaii, and
No, it's very, you can tell, like, because they respect the Japanese culture so much as well. So, like, I think I told you, Okabe-san, like, you kind of like Okabe-san's words hold a lot of heavy weight to them, especially. Yeah, they're coming from Okabe-san, kind of like the word of God. So, like,
watch out with what you say, right? Like, not a surfer on the beach, the actual surfer on the big waves. How about, Okabe-san, what stood out? Did you notice any themes, or what do you think of? Yeah.
But this time in San Francisco, we learned a lot about new business. We talked to many people, of course, the indie developer, but not only the indie developer, also the other, you know, our partner company. So one of them gave us really good idea for our new project.
Like, the last time at Gamescom was like more like an education, so you had a broad spectrum. This one is more like specifically picked for culture all that.
So this one you might have
to... It's like for only one person.
I think, maybe you have to scoop some out and then put on... We eat it with the chips.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you like get a big chip and then you put it on kind of like a dip.
Oh, okay.
How would this, like... Chopsticks, or because they gave us chopsticks?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why they brought chopsticks.
There's
a Japanese man among them.
They saw the Asian people. These guys need this.
I know. I've never seen them bring that.
Yeah.
It's like a fork at a Japanese restaurant. Yeah.
I had a friend. He's mainland Chinese. He has a picture of himself taking chopsticks in Italy, eating pizza. So I'm not surprised. They probably got that request before.
Yeah. To get sidetracked, but I think pasta Italians will kill me, but pasta with chopsticks is really, it's the best way to eat pasta.
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about.
I think, I
know what you're talking about because I've done the sacrilege.
Me too. Well, in Japan, they give you, when you buy pasta at a convenience store, they're like, do you want a spoon or like a spork or do you want chopsticks? And ever since I love chopsticks, when I buy pasta from the convenience store, I always get it with chopsticks. Yeah.
When in Japan.
When in, for sure.
I know in Belgium, do they spin the pasta on the fork?
Yeah, but like it's because like in Italy, people can do it just with the fork, but we need the spoon and the fork. So when you have, when you get to like Italy, or like any like southern European country, if you go there on holiday, you always have to be like, I'm sorry, can I get a spoon too? Because they don't bring it out there because everyone knows how to do it themselves with just a fork.
So it's like a little embarrassing.
It's a little embarrassing.
Italy, you have to be, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually good to know. My girlfriend and I are going to Italy.
Oh, really?
In May for a wedding.
Wow.
And awesome. So, first vacation in a while, maybe.
Wow.
And
did you guys go to Hawaii last year?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. For like a 3-day weekend.
Oh, remember you brought that kid? Yeah.
Yeah, for Italy. I haven't been in 14 years.
14 so, years. Wow. Yeah.
So, 12 years, yeah. But yeah, still, long time. So, for this, it's like.
Oh, you have to get this?
Yeah,
stuff?
Try to get the. There's seafood at the bottom and then try to drain it on the side. Yeah. Yeah, you guys are really in California now. Yeah, this is very, like, near and dear to my heart. Ceviche.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of like.
Okay. Oh, it's really nice. Damn.
Yeah, like, it should be, like, very citrusy and fresh.
Yeah. Wow. Mmm.
Yeah.
Mmm. Wow.
Yeah, fresh. I know we said we should get Korean barbecue and some more beef, but I was like, you know, everyone here likes fish. I bet you guys will like this too. Yeah.
It's maybe good to end it. Like, I feel fish is a bit lighter than meat. So it's good to end on something a bit lighter.
Yeah. Yeah. How about themes? Top three themes of GDC this time. What was everyone talking about?
What I found were the execs were talking about business, but the developers were talking about the job losses. That was the layoffs.
Yeah.
It was a very distinct difference, but to be understandable as well, the execs were trying to figure out how best to, you know, survive and make revenues based on what limited resources they have.
Yeah, I actually noticed. We hosted an indie meetup one of the days. A lot of people showed up. A lot of people's first GDC. I think everyone here, it's like 3, 5, 10, 15, like. Yeah, industry people, this is not a new thing for them, but I noticed the industry crowd, you know, in the hotels versus the indies at GDC, completely different topics.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, you know, with indies, I think they're talking about being on itch.io for a more custom game page, getting more feedback. And then I asked, itch has been around for like 15 years multiple of my industry friends never even heard of it, which I was surprised because it's been around for a long time. So yeah, there's kind of this cultural divide, I feel like.
Yeah. It's what they're exposed to, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I feel from the big industry, it's like bad news, but at the same time, I feel the indie scene is thriving. Like, it feels very different worlds right now.
You know, the new energy, it's actually like the industry is in a big shift right now. I also heard last year GDC was 28,000 people. This year is 22,000.
Oh, really? Oh,
so it did go down. It's gone down.
Okay.
And before COVID, it was 50,000. So 50, not 28. That's not a good direction.
Oh, yeah.
So
I was curious about that because I talked to people like, because I heard from everyone that everyone we talked to, like, are you coming? And they're like, yeah, we're coming, but we're not going to GDC itself, but we'll be in. And I was like, and that's what I heard from everyone. So I talked to other people and they're like, no, I think it's more crowded than last year, but good to know that it wasn't the case then.
That was my experience. Like, a lot of people came to GDC, but they didn't go into GDC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. For it's good for San Francisco, but probably not good for
the organizers.
Yeah.
Next year, it'll be just one guy with a banner, GDC, and everybody, let's go.
I think a lot of tech people used to go, but like ever since they have like the GDC vault, or you can like watch it online. Chime in online anyway, they're like, for these sessions, why do I have to be there? Wow.
It is called the Hornblower. the ship departing right now. Okabe-san, so maybe this GDC, what did your first GDC feel like to you?
My first one?
Yeah.
I came here for the different company, and then at that time I was the video game director, and then we have to kind of show our new game design to the big publisher like EA, Activision, or Midway, or, and we have the, do you know the Game Connection?
Game Connection?
Game Connection, yeah.
No, never heard of it.
Game Connection is a, they are organizing matching publisher and developer.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have the kind like a 30-minute slot for the each company. And then I do like a whole day presenting our game to the publisher in 30 minutes every time. So I kind of, I'm not really good speaking the English, but I got used to speaking in the English because I doing same thing over and over and again.
Yeah, it must have been really good near the end.
Yeah.
Do you remember any sentence from the pitch?
I do. We did usually like presenting our schedule and the budget, in the end of the presentation, and then we saw our game trailer and then game demo to them, and then I think every time they really impressed by our presentation because we so well prepared.
Bit of the cultural difference too, maybe a Japanese developer like very prepared, like was organized versus.
Especially Japanese company doesn't do presentation to the overseas company. Right. So we are kind of unique position.
Because you were like, be able to come here, present in English, American teams, Japanese developer.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people. I mean, I think even today.
No.
That's cool because this week we heard a lot of, we were the one getting pitched too.
Yeah.
So it must have been a bit nostalgic for you because you used to be on the other side
I did.
Yeah. Okay, now that's cool, yeah.
So now I'm kind of, publisher side of the
process. You changed.
I used to be you, so.
Yeah. How things have changed over a couple of years, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. Did anyone remind you of yourself?
Curious for two.
I know, yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah, you don't have to name who I'm also curious, yeah.
I don't remember the name or...
What was the game?
It was a horror team game, that she presented us like a really good speech.
Oh, the horror? Really good,
yeah.
Horror.
She was really good.
Wow, okay. She was really good, okay. She was like you when you pitched?
Yeah.
Wow, Kamusan, you were good.
Yeah.
I met her too, yeah.
Wow, interesting.
It was good pitch.
That was a good, that probably like from a pitch perspective, that was probably the best.
Yeah.
What do you think made it stand out from the others to you, Thomas?
It was very clear they all had experiences, not per se in video games, but in entertainment. And so they were very easy to, they were used to the business or more to the business side. Because sometimes when we talk to indies, there are people with like an idea and something that they want to realize. And that comes first and maybe not perhaps like the business side of things. But these were people that they had a solid idea. I thought it was interesting. And they had solid business experience to back that up as well, which made it stand out quite a lot. Yeah.
And from the publisher's perspective, especially in any investor, it's games, it's not just about the idea. I mean, it's about the whole thing as a whole.
Yeah.
And that means the business, and that means the game has to make money. That means you have to understand your customer.
Yeah. And of course, because what I noticed as well, there were lots of people with good ideas, but sometimes not the best way of presenting it. Because I know we were there to invest, or they were asking us for like some investments and stuff. But actually we probably cover some more than I do, but we were also there to listen to the interesting ideas. And sometimes they had very solid ideas, but just the way that it was pitched was not perfect. They didn't know your game. This is the most interesting part about your game. Why are you not pushing that more to the front?
Right.
But I guess when you're working on something for a very long time, it becomes very difficult to see what makes it
what's
stand
special
apart.
And what's
what's
not
special about. Yeah.
And also when you're nervous, you forget a lot about
it. Yeah, for sure. And it kind of show someone mentioned like, oh yeah, my throat was super dry right now. I'm like, oh, are you nervous? And I'm like,
oh, this morning.
Yeah. Oh yeah, probably they are. Yeah. We come at it from a completely different perspective.
I remember, you basically asked, are you nervous? And the guy says, yeah, I'm talking to Capcom.
Yeah.
There were some fun games today as well.
Yeah.
And I think one of the interesting things was all the diversity in the teams. And very interesting, because this is GDC in North America, right? It's very distinct American teams of all the spectrums of all the cultures and all that.
Yeah, that was cool.
The one from New York was interesting, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the one from New York, the one in particular, was a bunch of friends. They've been friends since high school. When they were in their early 20s, they started a game company that didn't work out. So they all went their separate ways, but they still kept in touch. And they were a very diverse bunch, right? There's a person, a representative from every group.
Yeah.
In every immigrant group in America. And they pitched a game that was not just had that sort of nostalgic feel, but also had a core essence of the respect from the culture that they grew up in. Not just in terms of the game, but in terms of the city and the feel of everything. I liked it a lot when I first heard it and thought this would be fun to.
Yeah, I think I liked the vibe of it a lot.
Plus, they also gave us the idea of like the potential mentorship that Capcom can provide.
Oh, okay.
That.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't go to the US often, right? But you can clearly tell when someone is like from New York, I feel during the pitch meeting and in the way that they talk and how fast they go.
Like
East Coast is where New York is, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like as Westchesters. Dude.
Yeah. Like Wisco's is like completely different vibes, completely different. It was funny to see, like, because you hear about it, but this is the first time I experienced myself as well. Oh yeah, there is a huge difference in like how they behave.
I don't know. This is good for them, but I can give them some kind of the advice about business model, because that game looks like a fake game in the movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you know, when you watch a TV show, and like someone's playing a game, they can't use real games. So they have like this video gamey looking thing. That's kind of what it looked like too.
Yeah. So maybe they can also pitch to the movie industry for using their game. Because sometimes they need to, you know, interact in the scene, right? But they cannot use the particular IP or anything because of the, you know, licensing fee.
Because in music, that's a whole business. Licensed music. There are like big businesses, ones like called Epidemic Sound, for example. You pay, like we've used this for some of our social media. Yeah. You pay $30 a month. You have access to all the library of music you can use in anything. Ads, product videos.
So maybe you guys can do like a, you know, agent for the movie industry to the introducing the indie game to the movie industry.
I actually was meeting with a couple of friends this week from music industry that are here randomly. Yeah, a lot of industries want to work with games still.
Yeah. Hmm.
They want to work with games, but they can't figure out how to work with games. That's a major issue. It's like, we are all part of the media world, but games is its unique animal and the youngest brother of the entire family.
Right.
So they're also not sure how to work with us.
Yeah.
So maybe that game needs to be, you know, specially made for the game. I mean,
movie. Like remove the UI, like allow it to be
used in the scene of the movie.
That's, do you see, I think one of our more interesting conversations this week also came from outside the games industry. We randomly, you know, before GDC even happened, we went to breakfast in another part of San Francisco and it was busy. So we sat next to this couple. They're like, you know, it's like, oh, like, it's like, why are you here? Oh, we do like marketing for games for some other things. And like, why are you? Oh, you're from South Dakota. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then the individual goes, oh, wow, I need marketing support for my thing too. what sort of marketing support do you do? And then we told them, and they was like, can you come and help out in our industry? Because our industry doesn't have that aspect of things.
Yeah, it was dire. It was like a dire need. Like,
oh, wow.
Wait, you guys do marketing and you understand like TikTok and video games? Like, please help. Because, obviously they sound like they're doing really well as a business, but it's just a reminder. After we had that conversation, I can't get it out of my head. Like, we in the games industry, really strong technologists, pop culture, live in software all day.
Right. Yeah,
forget,
yeah.
Like, the business world and the world is huge. Yeah. It's like, yeah, all these different things. If they could just use like 30% of what we know, hugely different to the business.
So. Especially because you guys, you take data and then you turn it into social media posts. Like, so I think, like expanding your horizon could be really interesting, because I think those people would be very, very much helped. Like, oh, this is my website. You put it through, I don't know, your technology. Boom, social media posts. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to hire like a social media manager or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no.
So.
Yeah, the world is your oyster, right? Like,
big world out there.
Yeah, big world. Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, if you think of it in engineering terms, right? Like testing of ships, designing of cities, everything exists for real world purpose. We've done it in games. There has to be some sort of overlap in which the game world can help, like maybe city planning or something like that.
Tom says, there are these taro chips on the table with a really good salsa. You guys, if that's what you're hearing, sorry, but they're really good. Yeah,
I heavily recommend it. I can't stop myself from eating them. But
it's like when they bring the fresh bowl, there's always these really nice big ones on top. And so we can't help ourselves.
Yeah. But yeah, that's actually one of the things that I, like, we have so much rich technology, but we're only like, we're a video game company. We're a video game company. We only make video games. But if you just look around, like, I'm sure we could like find like a good source of revenue working with other industries or like sharing that knowledge and
That's why BD guys come in.
Yeah, right?
BD guys are, that's our whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to find the opportunity within the vertical that we are slotted in.
Right.
But there typically can be pushback as well, because if you view yourself with first and foremost as a video game company, right, your resources are devoted to that. If a BD guy comes in with an idea for business replication, but outside game dev, then, you know, it detracts from that. It becomes harder as well. So I can imagine other business opportunities can be hard to execute because of the mindset of, we are only this product.
Yeah. And I think, of course, you know, video game industry is such a, it's all about the people, as I think we discussed before as well. So if you're there to, you want to be expressive, you want to make video games, if then some BD guy comes in and say, no, you're on agriculture, you're on something else, those people won't be motivated. So I get it.
In a weird way, I think what you and Okabe-san are currently doing, which is kind of like an extract out from the main chain of command, helps that sort of aspect of things, because you're able to experiment and try new things without the constraints of an existing hierarchy, which would be appropriate for BD side of things as well.
Yeah.
I think that's, on that note, I think that'll be a wrap for the podcast at CDC.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Good showing, everybody. Until the next episode.
Yeah. See you guys.
That's all for this special episode from the Game Developer Conference of 2024. We'll be back to our usual programming and some special guests in the next episode of Three Pillars. Please, as always, if you have any ideas, questions, or feedback, we'd love to hear from you at podcast@conduit.gg. See you soon.